This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined from Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
Karatani's a nice place.
I love Karatani. I've got whānau who are from there. In fact, I guess I'm from there. It's a beautiful place, and so is Whakatane today. Glorious day.
Your fabulous Auntie Kyla.
Yes, I love my Auntie Kyla.
So, we have got another coming up for air. Who have we got today?
Today, it's my great pleasure to introduce a very remarkable woman with an extremely exciting history, particularly in sustainability and all things good, Kate Elmers. Kate, it is wonderful to have you with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Kate. Where did you grow up, Kate?
I grew up in a beautiful little town on the east coast called Gisborne or Tairawhiti.
What was that like?
I loved it because there's a lot of freedom and I had horses and it was just me and my horses living the dream on the beach. A lot of freedom for us kids to run around and just live life like traditional Kiwi kids, go out at sunrise and come back at sunset. So it's very cool. But, you know, as I got older, I had a very inquiring mind and I wanted to explore the world, so that I did.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I actually wanted to be a journalist. That was my dream, really. I wanted to tell stories, but somehow I just didn't follow that. I think I found out sort of what was happening with journalism in terms of it being digitalised and how much that was actually changing the integrity of journalism, dare I say. I think the pressure of being a journalist, I'm not sure I was cut out for those deadlines. But I did do a little bit of written sort of publishing in newspapers and a little bit of radio. I actually had my own little radio show for a while, but ended up getting into business. So here I am, sustainable business.
What attracted you to business?
My upbringing. So I came from a very business-focused household and I had a very early passion and desire to protect the environment. And I guess with business very much part of my DNA within the household and my upbringing, in my interest in environmentalism. And then I started putting the two concepts together sort of at the very beginning of my career, really, and it wasn't really a thing at university at that time. And I remember talking to my dean going, why not? So I, in protest, I wrote all of my assignments about sustainable brands and sustainable issues and sustainable things, and that was it, me making my mark.
What was it about protecting the environment, and where did that come from?
I think growing up in such a beautiful environment and just being a person with a conscience, very early on I sort of had a conscience for this or that. And then realizing, you know, we need to, someone has to be a voice for the environment, because the environment doesn't have a voice.
No, it doesn't get to sit around the table.
That's right.
Maybe it should.
And, you know, I've helped a little, but, you know, it's such a big thing. But I think every little thing you can do can amount to a lot over your lifetime.
Maybe we should start a movement of having it around the council table, a rock. a really big rock.
Paint it a nice face on it so people can relate.
So you went off to study with a vision of both business and the environment. And as you pointed out, that wasn't perhaps very common. What sort of response did you get?
Well, gee, okay. You know, you're a hippie, greenie, all that sort of stuff. But when I could sort of point out, I was lucky enough to watch a fantastic speaker, the late and great Ray Anderson from Interface Floor, carpet manufacturing company from Georgia, USA, who is now a restorative organization. They've reached their carbon neutral goal already. Ray, the founder, had a vision, and, you know, I was just lucky enough to, well, I'd already studied all these, you know, leading brands that were, Living Nature, I think, was one of them in New Zealand, the skincare brand from years ago, and there were other pioneers out there, and then I heard Ray speak, and I learned about, you know, the notion of efficiencies, and then I started selling this notion of efficiencies to boardrooms, going, hey, you can actually save money by being green, and, you know, there's opportunities for your company by being green, because this is the way that things are moving. And, you know, so then they started listening a little bit more. And then I was caught up in a sort of a dichotomy of greenwashing and, you know, sort of saying they did, you know, more than they did, or alluding to the fact that, you know, companies have done more than they've done. And then so there was that accountability gap there for quite some time. But, you know, soldier on. Keep that message going.
The Interface carpets had a quite revolutionary at the time business model, that they're actually coming in and it wasn't so much selling more stuff, it was selling the service. In their case, the service of warm feet.
Yeah, well, that's one way of looking. I've looked at all sorts of different aspects of their business. And, yeah, they started with the carpet tile, so that allowed, you know, tiles to be replaced instead of full carpets to be replaced. And then it was sort of changing the materials and circular loops going on with their materials and take-back schemes and then energy, renewable energy, and then all sorts of different things. Yeah, but it started with a vision and a great leader.
What happens when sustainability isn't more efficient? Or efficiencies aren't enough?
That's very, very true. And it can end up costing a company. I looked at their share price and I looked at variations of their share price in an assignment I did under Lincoln recently. And there were variations in their share price, but I think now that with all these sort of imposed fees and taxes and things like that on emitters, that their payback will come from a financial perspective. But, yeah, look, I don't know. I think it's better if companies can start from ground base with sustainability in mind as opposed to adapting their organisations. That's a really tricky question. There's no real easy answer, I don't think. Can depend on a lot of things.
If there was easy answers, we probably would have done it already.
Yeah. Some are.
But maybe that's the problem. Maybe we think it's just so easy. And it turns out it's not.
Yeah, no, it's very complex. There's lots of different factors going on there. It's not straightforward.
And if
every
it's
now
not...
and then you get a disruptor who just nails everything. A disruptor comes in and boom, they just tick all those boxes. They're profitable. They get all the government grants. You know, they clean up as they're going. It's just very cool. But for a business that's adapting, yes, it can be a much more difficult route.
So what is it that you do now?
I'm just I feel like a lady of leisure right now. I spent the last 5 months advising on different projects and initiatives and things. I'm on an environmental policy advisory group. I'm hopefully going to be working with a local councillor soon on some of her great green initiatives. I'm advising with my family business, and I'm actually looking at starting up an SME consultancy in sustainability. I'm working with the local company trying to find out, they're very green minded, but try and find out what it is that SMEs need help with. It could be down to just finding the right tools for an SME to use in order to become more sustainable, or learn how to become more sustainable, or measure, just what is it that SMEs need. So that's the research I'm doing at the moment.
If business got us into this mess, can it get us out?
I say that about science. I worked in science for a CRI for a while. Science, I used to say to the scientists, science got us into this mess. Can you get us out of it? Oh, I don't know. I think there has to be some regulation. We've seen that none or little has not necessarily resulted in the right thing being done. But lots of people would argue with that. I think there's a lot of power that consumers have, an enormous amount of power, and they need to wield that around and use it with every purchasing dollar they have. Great leaders, and I'm not sure those leaders are out there, to be honest. I think we're still looking at our boardrooms going, there's not enough diversity there, there's probably too many men. There needs to be some younger leaders, some inspired leaders. But again, it comes back to profit. Every organisation is there to make a profit, essentially. That's part of sustainability. So, yeah, not an easy solution on the horizon necessarily. But if we all work in the same direction in a collaborative approach, then hopefully we can get to this momentous goal.
Is that a fundamental flaw, that if we're trying to sell more stuff, we can't also do all the other things we need to do?
I guess I look at the bioeconomy and the green economy as surely we can find some kind of business opportunity within all of this that is green, even if it's sort of the sharing economy, or you know, is we must be able to think our way out of this. Surely, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but anyhow.
We'd like to think so. Let's take your track. Let's have the Childish Gambino. Feels Like Summer. Why this one?
It just was a groovy song. Makes me feel like I'm at the beach. I am at the beach, by the way. And I think I've had a pretty stressful 9 years, to be honest, so I'm starting to feel like I'm chilling out a little bit more. And when my thesis is finished, I'm going to want to be listening to the song every day.
Summer, I feel like summer. I know.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko taho ahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are. A triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and we find ourselves now in a period of recovery in all aspects of our lives. And it's so important that at this time we recognize that within us all, there innately lives an inner nurturer, and this inner nurturer has the capability to encourage, to embrace, to support, to offer compassion, to offer empathy, sympathy, comfort, to offer a listening ear, to offer a soft shoulder, to offer love, loving eyes. And this inner nurturer lives within us all. And I know for myself, my inner nurturer was really activated by the living world. And in this connection with the living world, I feel such a strong desire to nurture and celebrate. And of course, we're all part of the living world, and this extends to each person, each life form. So I really hope for you, you're having the opportunity for your inner nurturer to come forward, first and foremost for yourself, because we cannot sustainably care for those around us unless we are meeting our own needs for love, for understanding, for self-compassion. And from that position of strength, then our inner nurturer can venture forth and offer that beautiful space of trust, of knowledge, and we can provide a safe environment for those we love to share how they have been feeling, how their lives have been going. And this is so precious. And whichever life forms we're encountering, whichever life forms we're nurturing, this process of nurturance, I believe, feeds and sustains and nourishes that very important aspect of ourselves that is innate and that we have been gifted when we were brought into this world. I believe that we have unique skills to care for the world around us, and that's why we're here. So I really hope for you in your daily lives, you are being offered the support, the love, the care that you deserve. And your inner nurturer is having the opportunity to shine, to be a bright light in a new world that sometimes can seem dark and people can feel lost in. I know for myself, of course, that the living world offers great comfort, the beauty of the living world of which we are a part. And I hope that for you, you're having the opportunity to give yourself the time to be in places and spaces that restore you, that remind you of the magic of the world, the beauty of the world that is always there for us. We don't need to do anything to connect with it. We already are connected. It's a powerful connection. And of course, being part of the show is a wonderful pleasure and privilege. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. And I'll look forward to talking to you next time. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Kate Elmers.
Kate, before we listen to your podcast, what would you like our listeners to know before they listen? And is there anything in particular that you want them to listen out for?
Well, waste minimization is a passion of mine, and an enormous amount of waste that goes to landfill is through the construction sector. I also have a passion for building. I love houses and I love design and building. I did this interview because I wanted to learn more about the future of green building in New Zealand, and some of the pitfalls and some of the pros of green building, and where we're heading in the future with green building.
When I listened to your podcast, and our listeners will hear it, I was alarmed at the statistics that came out of that in terms of just how much waste is generated by building. Is there a way forward?
I think a lot of it comes to the ability to scale these initiatives or concepts around recycling or waste reduction. Obviously, innovation within the sector, so that we can come up with some innovative products that result in less waste. It is difficult to scale the recycling initiatives in a country as small as New Zealand. We need more processing facilities, and there are great distances between depots, etc. But yeah, in the building sector, you're dealing with a lot of the time builders, and you know, they're there to get the job done. And so I think education plays a big part, educating builders and architects and construction managers and things like that, and showing them easy solutions for them, so it doesn't slow the job down.
Alrighty, let's go with your Coming Up for Air podcast.
Welcome to Coming Up for Air, Contemporary Issues in Sustainability. Today we're talking with Joe Quad, the manager of the Green Star Building Rating Tool at New Zealand Green Building Council. We're basing our conversation on the topic of green building materials and the changing New Zealand legislation around the importation of building products. With construction leaving a pretty sizable environmental footprint, it's time to have a good look at materials, design, and other ways to reduce the sector's emissions. A study called Delivering Sustainable Housing Through Material Choice by Taylor, Roy and researchers examines the influence of building materials on climate change and identifies how more sustainable construction in New Zealand may contribute to the government's 2050 emissions reduction targets. The study focused on the environmental impact of materials and potential new materials that could conform with the New Zealand Building Code standards. Emissions from the building were calculated from materials used in foundations, framing, wall cladding, and roofing. It was evident that concrete materials had the most embodied carbon and timber the lowest, yet it's important timber is sourced using sustainable forestry practices. Due to the recyclability component of steel, steel framing had lower emissions with its closed-loop life cycle. The study also touched on new building materials that would conform with the New Zealand Building Code, such as 3D printed concrete blocks compared with brick and concrete wall cladding. However, it is well known that New Zealand is host to a restrictive building code, with risk-averse councils and large organisations dominating the building products market, with little room for innovation. Though with regulatory changes on the horizon, as identified in Catherine McGregor's April 5 spin-off article, this will allow importation of more building products, and with a greater focus on locally produced radiata pine, This could give a real boost to green building in New Zealand. I'd now like to welcome Jo Quad. Jo is passionate about environmentally friendly design and construction. He grew up living in Germany, Singapore, California, and Canada before moving to New Zealand 3 years ago. He grew up wanting to be an architect, but got more interested in sciences and eventually studied physics first year uni before switching to engineering. Jo now brings a strong sustainability, engineering, and project management background to the New Zealand Green Building Council. Hi Jo, thank you so much for taking the time to feature on my podcast about green building in New Zealand. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience and just speak a little about your role at the New Zealand Green Building Council?
Okay, thanks. My pleasure to be here. My name's Jo Quad. I'm a technical manager at the Green Building Council of New Zealand. That means I look at quite a few different things, but my main focus is on green building rating tools and really how can we progress sustainability in the built environment.
Fantastic. Sounds very interesting. In the past couple of decades, building in this country has increased significantly. The sector is responsible for about 20% of our carbon emissions profile. And in 2019, New Zealand committed to reduce our emissions via the Zero Carbon Act. So the building sector now has to find ways to reduce its impact. And one strategy for doing this is through materials choice. Does that 20% figure sound right, Jo? That's quite substantial, about one-fifth of our total emissions profile.
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's one thing, it's important to notice that number is on a consumption basis. So often we look at emissions on a production basis. So in New Zealand, our emissions are somewhat skewed in the sense that we have a lot of agriculture, which is roughly half of our emissions on a production basis, but most of that product in the agriculture business is for export, right? So there's just two different ways of looking at it. So that 20% number is when you look at it on a consumption basis. So that would not include all those emissions from agriculture because that's being produced for export. So that's why those numbers can sometimes, you can have different numbers talking to what sounds like the same thing, but could be very different.
Do you think the figure would actually be more than that or less?
If you included all the export things, then that number would be lower. We export more than we import. And we export more high emission things than we import.
So materials have a big impact with their embodied carbon. Could you give us some insight into materials used in the building sector?
Yeah, so that is a really interesting question and something that's really come gotten a lot of attention more recently. And that's, again, that is important to recognize how that's unique to New Zealand in some ways, because emissions are often thought about as operational and embodied when it comes to buildings, and operational energy again is what everything that's used to operate a building. So that's keeping your lights on and your heat and things like that. And that because we have a very clean energy grid, most of our electricity in New Zealand comes from renewables. Our operational emission tends to be relatively low, especially if we're using electricity for things like heating compared to oil or gas. So our proportionally compared to a lot of countries, our operational emissions are very low for buildings, but that thereby makes the embodied emissions seem quite high. And so that's things like everything that goes into building a building. And the main things that we think of the high emitting materials are things like concrete and steel and the things really that go into the structure of a building.
Yes. And what are some green innovations out there that might be addressing the building materials and carbon issue?
In recent years, a lot of progress has been made. So, for example, concrete, I think worldwide concrete production accounts for something like 8% of all emissions, which is seems like a crazy high number, but and then it's really due to the processes involved in making cement. So the innovation there is because cement is such a high emitting material, we need to use less cement. So even though obviously one option is to use less concrete, the other is to use less cement in concrete. So some of the innovation there is how do we replace the cement content in concrete? And there's a few different materials that can be kind of substituted in place of cement. And that's where some work has been done recently and has led to some positive outcomes in terms of removing those emissions.
Yeah, I have come across a few exciting innovations in this area just through research over the years. There's a perception that going green is more expensive. What are the costs versus benefits of going green in the building industry?
Yeah, that comes up a lot. And again, I think there's so many different ways of looking at it. A lot of the time when people say going green is really expensive is that it's not thought of holistically. It's almost like an add-on. Things are done, you know, people want to do things the same way they've always done them. And then they get to almost 90% of the way there. And then they try to make some little tweaks to make it green. And that never really works. It's not efficient. You don't achieve the best outcomes. And it tends to cost a lot more. Whereas if you think of it from the beginning, for example, something as simple as if you rotate a building, and then you have the sun coming from a different angle, that's not going to cost you anything, but it could have a huge impact on the amount of energy that building consumes. So some things, yes, and again, especially in the materials space where something might be new and innovative, yes, that might cost more, but sustainability as a whole does not necessarily have to cost more. And then there's also ways where sometimes you can actually save you money. For example, green finance is becoming really popular now. So where most of the major banks in New Zealand are offering better loans if you are going green. So that could actually be a cost saving.
It's said to be about 50% more expensive to build a standalone house here in New Zealand than it is in Australia. So that's quite substantial. So to address this, the government has announced it's changing the rules to allow the sale of products here which meet building standards from other trusted jurisdictions like Australia, for example. So how do you think this will affect green materials coming into the country?
That's a really interesting question. I think it doesn't necessarily have to affect it at all. We rely for green, quote unquote, green materials, we rely a lot on what we call independent certifications. So these are third-party bodies that certify materials. And those, I think, will actually start to play a bigger part when we know a material that may have come into the country and it doesn't necessarily meet those local regulations. But if it has that third-party verification that is from an international accredited body, that can then potentially be relied on to assess those materials.
That's great. We can rely on that accreditation. And then if the building regulations allow more importation of products, then overall we may see an increase of certified green building materials coming into New Zealand, which would be great.
That's what we hope for, and that's what we've definitely something we drive through our green building rating tools here at the Green Building Council is that we reward products or projects that use those certified products to achieve points towards their certification by using those products.
Great. It's a really interesting space and one that I'm very fascinated with. Finally, if you could change one thing right now that would make the most significant point of difference for the future, what would that be? It could be down to anything at all.
Yeah, I think, so to me, this is from innovation and technology and things like that are really great and exciting, and they are absolutely necessary. To me, ultimately, I think the biggest change comes down to consumer behavior. And that's not specific to building. That applies to most things when it comes to sustainability, especially things like expectations of what do you really need from a building or from a home, and that can be things like the size of a building. Ultimately, the way more sustainable building you can build is a building that's either reused, an older reused building, or just something that's much smaller, right? So we're building really big houses. Yes, using greener materials is beneficial, but if we build those houses smaller to the sizes that we really just need, that meet our expectations, our needs, rather than what we want or think we might need based on what we see on some luxury home on TV, then that's ultimately going to have a bigger impact from my point of view.
That is a really valuable message to take out there. We all have a lesson to learn regarding that, and it's consume what you need. Don't be dominated by greed, and sometimes less is more. And don't waste, certainly. Look, thanks so much. I really appreciate your time, Joe, and we look forward to perhaps chatting in the future about more green building matters.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's a topic I'm very passionate about, so I'm always happy to share and talk more. Thank you.
It's great to get the insight at Joe's level into the positives of green building, understanding that it really is a holistic approach that primarily involves design consideration with factors such as having the right orientation of the building to maximize thermal mass, or not building too big and beyond one's needs. While materials are important and the ability to import more energy efficient materials, that age-old message of sustainability prevails. Thanks for listening to our podcast. We hope to host you on the airwaves again soon.
Kate, that was wonderful. Thank you very much. What did you take away from that? What was your favourite part?
Bizarrely, my favourite part was learning about green financing, because up until that point I had thought, why would people do this? If it costs more, we need to figure out how to find a way to make it cost less or somehow incentivise green building. And I learned from Joe that green financing is a fantastic incentive for people to get behind green building. So that was like a light that went off in my head, and since investigated a little bit more around green financing and how that can enable some of these big green projects to go ahead.
Right, Kate, I have some questions to end the show, and not very much time, so we're going to have to riddle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Raising my son on my own. Marvita may or may not be able to relate, I'm not sure, but I see your lovely boy when you're taking your lectures. I've got a lovely boy too, and he's 9 years old, and he is a great little chap, and it's been a single parent journey for me, so that is my greatest life achievement ever.
Well done. I don't know if your son spends quite as much time in the view of the camera as Mawira's Jack.
He likes to look at a screen of some sort, let's put it that way, but so we've got to limit that.
What?
Getting up to sports, I say.
What is your superpower?
Doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes when I need to make magic, I can make magic happen.
That's a good one. Make magic happen. Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I'm just quietly.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
I always see sustainability as being such a big topic that sort of integrates itself into everything in our lives. If I did, I would say don't waste.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
The illusions I have about what I can achieve in life. Sorry. And what I can achieve in life, that too.
And
making magic happen.
What is the biggest challenge or opportunity you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
I think finding this opportunity to help SMEs within New Zealand. And to be honest, after this experience, I might just assign myself the task of starting my own podcast.
Indeed. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Don't ever believe that you can't be an initiator or an instigator of change. Everybody has that within them. And if you don't know how to do it big, start doing it small, because small things can turn into big things.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
Pete, thank you very much for the lifelong commitment that you have made to being the change. Lots of people come into these spaces thinking that they want to be the change, and they do have some success, but you have a life of success in that space, and that commitment that you've made has paid off. I see it all over the place. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we wish you all the best, and I can't wait to hear your podcast in the future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your guidance and your help and your insights and working with you. Thank you, Maura and Sam.
Thank you. Thank you for that. We're going out to the police. Every little thing she does is magic.
Oh, so good. Every little thing she does is magic.
Every little thing she does is magic.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world, brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We were joined today by Kate Elmers, part of our Coming Up for Air series. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Matiwa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.